right. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Tuesday, May 10th of 2022. Thanks for tuning into the stream here today. If this is your first time watching this show, this is a live Q&A style show where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS, really whatever you guys want to talk about. If you have questions you would like me to answer on this show, you can email us, support@sabersim.com. You can ask your questions in live on YouTube chat, or you can send your questions to the Office Hours channel in Slack. If you are not already in the Slack community, there's a link to join in the description of every past Office Hours video or podcast. We are now up on most podcast outlets, basically anywhere you go to listen to your podcast. I think we are still waiting to get a final approval here from Google Podcasts and Amazon Music. But we are up on Spotify, Apple, a few I had actually never even heard of, Stitcher. What else is on there? iHeartRadio, Pocket Casts, all kinds of different podcast outlets. So if you are interested in listening to the podcast version of this show, it is now available out there mostly. My dog here providing a bit of a cameo performance on today's stream, heading up to the couch. So anyway, we've got a good one here in front of us today. Only a couple questions in the queue. We've got a question about how much to break down your builds, how granular to get with your builds based on all of the different contest types you might be playing. A good question, a frequent question, one that's always good to talk about here. Another question about... a very similar question to one we've been talking about a lot the past couple weeks about adjusting the ownership fade slider based on other parts of your process, your research builds, things like that. And we'll go from there. So let's go ahead and pull up the app and we'll get started here. Get the right view. Let me know if we have microphone troubles again today. Brad says, did you figure out the mic? I believe so, but I didn't really do anything that special. I basically did a big... turn everything off, everything that could be related, and turn it back on again. Made sure all the drivers were up to date and everything. It did another video yesterday, not a live one, but we did another one yesterday and had no microphone issues on that one. And that was after I made all those adjustments. So definitely hoping we're in a little bit of a better microphone spot today. Give me a shout if we're not. I'm not really sure what I'll do if it sounds bad as far as on stream. Today. I listened yesterday. I heard what you guys were talking about. I'm not sure if we have troubles again. I'm not sure what I can do on stream here, but I will continue to troubleshoot off stream. So anyway, let's go ahead, start answering some questions. Let's get into it here. I was sweating. I played the showdown today for this Tigers A's game. This is the one lone day game that's going on today. And I was watching that game for a bit before the stream. And then I realized that I was watching a Tuesday morning regular season Tigers and A's game. And I was like, what am I doing here watching this terrible baseball game here? But rooting for the Skuball strikeout props over at the moment. So we'll see what happens there. But anyway, let's go ahead and get into it here. And sorry if I had any A's or Tigers fans. Probably no A's fans here in my audience watching. But if I have any maybe Tigers fans watching along. Anyway, let's go ahead. Let's stop screwing around. Let's get into some questions here. So this is from Mr. T, and a good question to start with here. So he said, after your advice, I've changed my strategy a touch with the contests I'm entering. I'm now entering a few different types of contests, such as the $1 3 max, the single $1 and $2 contests as well. Still putting in about 100 entries into the 5-cent contests. Also trying DK for the first time with their 20 max contest. When I use the entry editor in SaberSim for all of these different types of contests, how should I navigate that as all of the different contests are different? And as such, I would assume they need to be attacked differently if I'm entering multiple 20 max contests. For instance, should I set that up using the default sliders and then set my lineups to 40 or 60 so that I have unique lineups, or just do the same 20 in each 20 max? Thanks, Jay. Yeah, so interesting question here. Kind of a lot to consider, basically. There's a lot that kind of comes into play here. I've got kind of an interesting contest selection mix here tonight and kind of experimenting on some of these really small contests and satellites and things like that. So trying to experiment with some of these smaller fields. So let's talk about this here tonight. So I'm gonna handle this from a couple different angles, I guess, here. So first of all, from the question of, you know, should you play a unique lineup into every single contest of a similar category, right? So would you want to play a unique lineup into the solo shot, the quarter jukebox, dime times, things like that, right? Playing more unique lineups is going to spread out your risk. That is going to lower your variance. It's going to allow you to realize an edge if you have one more quickly, but it's going to lower your overall total ROI, right? Instead of maybe even not your total ROI, it's going to lower your upside on any given night. Instead of maximizing the potential upside you have in that set of 20 lineups, you're spreading out risk, right? Nothing's free in DFS. You have to pay in the form of maximum upside, of a lower maximum upside to earn the lower variance, the ability to realize some of your equity back more quickly, right? There's not necessarily a right answer of if you should or shouldn't do that. It is going to depend a little bit on personal risk tolerance, right? Typically, I think it depends a lot on what the payout structure of those contests look like, right? Me personally, so for this contest mix that I have here, at least with this set of lineups, I'm not really comfortable having a $1,000 to like a $10 swing purely based on what contest my lineup ends up in. I'm not comfortable with that amount of randomness creating that much of a swing. So I'm going to play the same 20 in every single lineup tonight, right? Now, in a set of single entries where maybe you're playing 5 or 6 or 10 different single entries, where on one hand, maybe the lowest score is, or the lowest prize to first is $500 and the biggest prize to first is $2,000. Now, obviously, you'd rather win $2,000 than $500, but ultimately, this is generally going to come down a lot to your own personal level of comfort here with the balance between spreading out variance and maximizing upside, right? In terms of if you're playing a unique lineup into each. As a general rule of thumb, if you kind of just want like a general heuristic, I would recommend playing the same lineups in, well, this is a very general rule of thumb. I want to say that, right? This isn't going to work for everybody, not all situations, but as a very general rule of thumb, play unique lineups in your full spread of single entries and three maxes, that combined group of contests, and play the same lineups in your 20 maxes and 150s, right? I think that's generally a pretty good rule of thumb. That also helps, you know, once you get up to that 150 max area anyway, it becomes a lot of lineups to manage. Managing 300 unique lineups on a given slate can be a lot. Making sure those are all good lineups that you want to be invested in can be kind of difficult at that point. I think that's a decent rule of thumb there. That will generally kind of strike a nice balance there. But it is going to depend a little bit on personal risk tolerance. Now, the other component of this, I think, is more on the practical side of how do you actually go about doing this, right? When you have all these different contests, these are all going to have different ideal sliders, all these different contests you can play, right? Everything's going to be optimized differently based on if it's a single entry, how many entrants are in the contest, et cetera. Should you build everything separately? Where's your breakpoint between different contests? Like, where should you group things together a little bit? How do you actually go through the practical part of building out these lineups? I think some of that depends a little bit on how much time you have and also on how much other work you are doing at other steps of the process, right? Building one build for all of your lineups is far easier than building a lineup for every single different category of contest you are playing, right? It takes a lot longer to build all those different builds. Now, if you are not adding any other value to the other steps of the process, right? Maybe you're not editing exposures, you're not doing a lot of other things in individual builds, and you have time to do it, maybe it makes sense to run a build for your 20 maxes, then run a build for your single entries and three maxes, then run a build for your 150 maxes. So you get to take advantage of the little edges that having the perfectly optimized settings give you for those contests. Now, for me, a lot of times my process involves running a research build to research ownership and find an exploitation edge, right? And then downloading that and then calculating leverage for each player and re-uploading that file and uploading that as a projection and then running a build, a final build. I often for a main slate, if you're waiting for lineups to come out, I don't feel like I have time to run individual builds for every single contest I'm playing and typically end up grouping them together, right? For basically the convenience of getting to run everything in one build, I'm willing to sacrifice the tiny kind of inefficiencies of not having the perfect sliders for each contest I'm playing. I would say if you are just starting out, you're probably going to be better off picking just a midpoint set of sliders, right? If you're playing some single entry, some 3 max, some 20 max, some 150 max, all different sizes, I would pick a midpoint set of sliders, something like the 20 max 10 to 50K, and just use that as a baseline and build all of your lineups together in that and work from that. Because then you'll have, at the end here, you'll have one build to edit exposures from. You'll have one build to manage. It will be a lot easier for you to late swap and handle swap situations if you need to do that as well. In your particular case here, Mr. T, for this exact situation, right? It sounds like you're playing a couple single entries. So you're playing a couple single entries, playing a couple 20 maxes on DK and 100 entries into the 5 cent 150 max on FanDuel. What I'd probably end up doing is I would... Hang on. Let me think about this here. What I would probably end up doing is I would take the biggest contest you are playing on each site, right? So if it's a 20 max on DraftKings, great. If it's a 100, if you're playing 100 lineups in the 150 max on FanDuel, that's great, right? Figure out what the contest that needs the biggest number of unique entries is and build that many lineups, right? And then when you go to fill, right? So this is a 20 lineup set here, right? What I would do is take your 20 maxes, right? So everything that has 20 lineups in it, and you can kind of do that pretty easy by just sorting here. And fill these, right? In this case, in your case, it might just be one, right? Fill these with 20. But then play a unique lineup in all of these other contests, right? Or play basically like uniquely randomly filled lineups in all of these other contests, right? And that's going to give you, so it's going to say there's not enough, right? You're going to duplicate some lineups with in between contests, right? But this is going to kind of spread you out a little bit and avoid a situation where you're like very heavily concentrated. You have a ton of action on your first three lineups and then just very little action on the rest of your lineups in your pool and find that nice balance there. But I would do this all with building one build and picking kind of a midpoint set of sliders that works for everything. I think that's a really nice balance to strike there between those two options, where you're not spending a ton of time trying to build different builds for every single lineup you're playing, but you're also spreading out your risk a little bit. Let me know if that helps. Let me know if that's clear of what I'm actually kind of saying to do here. And good question. I think overall, I think in general, I find that people sometimes oversweat getting these sliders in the exact perfect positions for their contest and making sure that they have a build. Like if they're playing some 3 max and some single entry, right? Overly sweating this difference from 3 to 4 to 5 to 4 to 5 when in reality it doesn't have a huge massive difference between those two. You're probably worth just grouping everything together here and building it all together. But with that, I think kind of the last note I'll make there is if you do want to do different builds, right? If you want to kind of group out your different contests, maybe you are playing contests that really do have very different sliders, right? Like maybe you have some 150 maxes. Maybe you have like, I don't know. I know at some points throughout the season, DraftKings will run like 75,000 lineup, $5 150 maxes, right? Really big contests. And then maybe you have some of those and then also some really small single entries in there, right? Really different strategies. If that's the case, I think one way to group your lineups without making your lineup build workload way bigger is to group your single entries and 3 maxes together and do all those together. And then group your 20 maxes and 150s together and build those together. And that can be a nice balance there too. of not having too many builds to do, but also getting the value of the sliders that is a little more optimized for those contests. So, but okay, cool. So Jesse James had asked a question, similar one. We've talked about this kind of thread quite a bit the last couple weeks here. He said, if I adjust projections or team totals in step one based on ownership and or leverage in research builds when creating my lineup, should I leave the ownership slider where it is? Sometimes I feel like I'm double counting for ownership. Bonus question. In a research build, does it ever make sense to leave the correlation slider where it is or make a stacking rule when trying to determine optimal stacks for baseball? Thanks. Okay, good questions. Two different ones here. So let's start with the first one. The short answer is yes, I think it does make some sense. The longer answer is that I'm not going to be able to tell you exactly how much to adjust that ownership fade slider because I don't really know what your process is looking like. The more aggressive you are making adjustments for ownership in step one or even in step two, the more I think you can justify turning that slider down, right? We gave an example yesterday where we created a stacking rule where you had 2 5 stacks against the two chalkiest pitchers, best projected pitchers on the slate, right? That's going to be, you're basically fading very heavily those two pitchers in every lineup. That's very aggressive. And I think turning your ownership fade slider all the way down as a result to kind of counterbalance that makes some sense. If you are kind of making a lighter touch overall to your team totals, just based on what you found in your research builds, maybe you turn down the ownership fade slider a little bit, but maybe not as much. And if you're having a very light touch overall, maybe you leave the ownership fade on completely and allow that to still provide a little extra value in the build process. So yes, I would say, you know, just speaking theoretically, anytime you are making adjustments to exploit ownership, anytime you're making adjustments to projections or, you know, your min and max exposures or things like that in step one to try to exploit ownership based on your research, I think it does make sense. I think it, like, on a theoretical level, makes sense to turn down the ownership fade slider on the build process, right? But I won't be able to tell you exactly where to put it. I think you'll have to, the easiest way to figure out where you want that is to make your adjustments and then experiment with a couple builds with that ownership fade slider at different levels and see where it ends up and see how those lineups look and see what you like. So, good question. Cool. Let's keep it going. All right. Bouncing over to YouTube chat here to get caught up real quickly. Richie said, hey, could you talk a bit about strategy? I've been mostly making 4-3 and 4-4 stacks on FanDuel and 5-3 on DK and wondering what your thoughts are. He said, but it seems like many nights the winning lineup is a 3-stack and the rest filled it in with random hitters who all go to hit home runs. Yeah, really good question. So I think building those, I think it's funny, you know, I read your first comment here and I planned on answering this one way. And then I read your second one and I plan on answering it the other way. So I'll kind of just give you all my thoughts here. So, I mean, playing these big 4-3, 4-4, 5-3 stacks, right? Those are the most correlated lineups that you can build, right? As I mean, is a 4-4 stack is literally the most correlated stack on Fando that you can build. And a 4-4 or a 5-3 is maximizing your correlation on DK. 4-3 just allows that one-off in there, right? Those are going to be generally very good lineups. I think that's a great idea. I don't think you necessarily always need to stack up to that level, right? To me, limiting my stack types to only 4-3s and 4-4s or 5-3s is something I would really only do on like the biggest slates. Now, we have a very big slate here tonight, right? We have a 12-game slate. That is a slate where I would probably be a little bit more inclined to play lineups with big stack sizes, right? The reason being when there's this many players in the player pool, well, there's two reasons really. When there's this many games and players in the player pool on a 12-game slate, right? On one hand, it is more likely just because there's 24 teams playing baseball tonight that one team is going to have a significant outlier event in their scoring, right? If there is a team that scores 12 runs, 15 runs, 10 runs even, depending on how the rest of the slate looks, right? It makes that 5-stack or 4-stack, that big 4-stack, way more attractive as an option for something that has high upside, right? There's just a higher probability that one team has that outlier outcome. But along with that, because there are so many players in the pool, it becomes a lot harder for the lineups in a contest to approach the optimal, right? We can rely on correlation to build us a better lineup that scores highly kind of on average in general, and less feel like we need to get every single player on the slate that hits two home runs or scores 25 fantasy points. And SaberSim, I think, will do a pretty good job of this here. But you'll see on, you know, 12-game slate like tonight, we've got five threes, four twos, four threes, four fours. But we do have these smaller stack sizes still kind of trickle in here. All of this is to say is I like playing those big stack sizes. I'm definitely in on that. I like them more on bigger slates. I don't know if I would restrict my lineup construction purely to just playing those stacks. Typically, I have been comfortable this season, generally mostly trusting SaberSim, with the exception of I still find myself wanting at least a four stack in every lineup. But for tonight, for example, right, I'm comfortable with this 4-2-2. I'm comfortable with these 5-2s, right? Even on a 12-game slate, I don't feel like I need to be perfectly correlated. Now, on the flip side, this other comment here, it seems like many nights the winning lineup is a three stack, then the rest filled in with random hitters who will go all to hit home runs. It's funny, I was talking about this right before I hopped on stream. That is going to happen, right? There are uncorrelated lineups that are going to get played in DFS contests, which means that there are lineups that are uncorrelated and probably low to neutral EV. Probably neutral to very low EV lineups that are occasionally going to win. Last night, we had that situation. I was actually just talking about this. I know that the DFS newsletter Twitter account had tweeted this out from last night. I am not a believer that a 2-2-2-1-1 stack or a 3-1-1-1-1-1 stack is a good lineup purely because it happens to take down a contest on a given night. Right. If someone nails the nuts with an uncorrelated lineup, it doesn't make that a good process. Right. And it is a bit like the birthday analogy, or I think it's called the birthday paradox, even though it's not really a paradox. Right. Where it only takes 23 people in the room for there to be a 50% plus chance of any two people sharing a birthday. Right? That intuitively doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but then you realize it's because you're looking at it from the standpoint of you're thinking that it's your birthday, right? The percent chance of it, of your birthday matching up to anybody else in the room, you need a lot more people there, right? The kind of corollary on the DFS side, the way I'm thinking of this, if I've lost anybody, I promise you, I'm making a point here. The corollary here is that if you take a 50,000 lineup contest, like the Minimax or something like that, and think about all of the lineups that are entered into that where people aren't stacking, right? Any of those lineups having an outlier outcome and ending up taking down the contest, right, is going to have a lot higher probability than your uncorrelated lineups you build randomly being the nuts, right? So probably a better way of putting this here is that, you know, a uncorrelated complete one-off lineup getting everybody that hit two home runs rolled a very positive outcome, but probably was not a positive expected value lineup if that slate was played out 10,000 times, right? Mostly just because, and if we actually think about mathematically why this is, it is because the payout for even first prize in some of these contests is not high enough for what stacking up the independent probabilities of like a 9-player home run probability actually is, right? The reason that we can get, or one of the main reasons we can get an edge in baseball DFS in particular, is because the prize pool is static, right? The prize pool just is what it is. And we can build it. We can either choose to play 8 players that have no correlation together, or 8 players that have some correlation together, or 5 players that have correlation together and 3 players that have correlation on the other side or something like that, right? We can build, if you were betting these, right? If you were betting parlays of different hitters together, most sites won't even allow you to parlay. Like historically, you wouldn't even be allowed to parlay 5 batters from the same team together, right? Now that a lot of these sports books have same game parlays and stuff, they price that in, right? It would be as if DraftKings, right? Imagine if you were playing a DFS contest in DraftKings and basically, right, like they said, if you built a 5-3 stack, they said, oh, okay, no, for your lineup, even though it's 50K to first, for your lineup, it's only 1,500 to first because you've correlated, right? You are increasing your probability of success in baseball DFS when you correlate a lineup, and the prize pool is the same as if you had chosen not to do that at all. It is to your benefit to take the opportunity to correlate. Hopefully I managed some way across my many different analogies here to explain my point. Two and a half cup of coffee right before the stream here today. I'm a two cup of coffee kind of guy. I've talked about that on stream here before. Two cups of coffee in the morning for me, but I had the extra half cup of coffee right before I went on stream here today. So I'm feeling kind of caffeinated. I'm feeling fresh, but I'm hoping I'm not losing anybody out there. So anyway, you know, the main point here overall, and this is why I said when I first started answering this question, I felt like these were two sides of the same coin. On one hand, I think it is a bit of a myth that you have to play like four threes or five threes and four fours in every lineup on these sites to be successful. And I think those heuristics and rules of thumb come from traditional optimizer land, where you have to tell the optimizer what stacks to use because it doesn't get correlation. You have to teach it what correlation is and how to use it. SaberSim understands correlation at a more robust level, so it can kind of tell you what are the right stacks to play on that slate, right? And how much of them for your contest you're playing. But secondly to that, I also wouldn't swing the other way. And just because a lineup wins that slate and is uncorrelated does not mean that that is a profitable strategy for you to take on. In fact, you are willingly giving up a known edge by playing uncorrelated lineups. There is a balance of correlation to raw scoring upside. The more players that are in a contest, the higher the Binx score is going to be, and the more that lineup that takes it down is going to have to approach an optimal. The optimals for a given baseball slate are generally not going to be very pretty looking 5-3s and 4-4s and 4-3s. They are going to be this weird mashed together lineup of like the two highest scoring pitchers and then, you know, probably like a 3-2-1-1 stack or a 2-2-2-1-1 stack, right? Those are the optimals. You don't need the optimal generally to win in DFS, but as contests get bigger and slates get smaller, you need closer to it. So, and slates getting smaller, contests getting bigger. Yeah. Generally you're going to need closer to the optimal. So, but anyway, let's keep it moving here. Ramsey said, when do you think tennis might become available? So we are, let's see. I don't have an ETA for you at the moment, unfortunately. So we are still kind of working on baseball. We're basically doing some of our final, I would say some of our final fine tuning for baseball on the model for our adjustments we wanted to make for this season. And then we are planning on moving on. When that is done, we will start working on our tennis sims and hopefully trying to get that up. I can't remember maybe Ramsey can tell me here. Does anybody know when the first major for tennis is? I think it's this month, right? It's the end of this month. I don't know if we're going to have it for then. It is our goal to work on the tennis sims as soon as we kind of pivot off of baseball for this season. With that said, we are hoping to get tennis up in the app before then, so that you can at least upload your own projections and use the SaberSim builder to build tennis lineups if you want. But it is the next kind of new sport that we want to sim and provide full sim support for. I would say I don't have an ETA, but I maybe hope that gives you an idea of our priority. It's one of the next main sports that we want to focus on. So Brad says, can I get help with the process? I guess maybe I don't know where or how to add more value across sports from limiting exposures. I get if I feel a certain player is going to have a good night, I might increase his exposure. But aside from that, I don't know where I can add value to get better lines. I know this is very open and everyone has their own way, but just not seeing where I can add more value and get better lines. It's tough. And it is going to vary a lot on a sport to sport basis on where some of those opportunities are. I think for baseball, I feel like I'm going to kind of beat a dead horse here. For baseball in particular, I think my favorite way to add value is to basically, you know, my research build kind of does a similar thing to what the ownership fade slider does, but it allows me to have more hands-on control over it at each step and have a little bit, it unblack boxes it a little bit. It lets me kind of decide where I'm going to exploit the field. I will kind of combine that with an intuitive sense of making ownership projection adjustments here at different steps as well. These are difficult questions to answer. And I, sometimes these come in where it's like, what can I do to start getting better at baseball DFS? I think, if you have the basics down, you're playing with strong contest selection and bankroll management principles, and you are doing what is kind of the bare minimum to be successful, which is watching weather in baseball, paying attention to late scratches and things like that, and swapping when you need to, and then building to a strategy that is good for the contest you are playing. I think the next steps from there get kind of wide open, and it depends a little bit on your play style. I think another thing that I've seen people be successful with before when they're trying to add value to their baseball process is really keying into pitchers and looking for, clues for individual pitchers that may not be coming through in the model. Sometimes, just as an example there, watching recent pitch velocity for different pitchers and seeing if pitchers have lost or gained velocity on their pitches can be an indication that they are dealing with maybe kind of a nagging injury or recovering from a nagging injury, right? Pitch counts is another one, right? We kind of pay attention to pitch count news, right? And do a pretty good job with trying to come up with our mean projection for what an individual pitcher is going to get to pitch. But if you're very clued into, how different pitchers and how different managers are unleashing their pitchers out there, right? There may be a situation where we miss or the field misses some news that comes out where maybe everybody's going to be on, I don't even know, I don't have a good example on this particular slate, right? But maybe everybody's going to be on a chalky ace pitcher and there's something that the field has kind of missed that maybe that guy's, only going to get 80, 85 pitches or something like that, right? I think there is some projection-based research that you can do as well to add a little bit of value. All my strategy in DFS really specifically comes from that exploitation angle of assuming that the projections are right enough, assuming that the ownership projections are generally right enough, but that I can use that information and optimize it a little bit better than what the field is going to do and figure out what the optimal way to play is. So a lot of times my answers come from that standpoint, but I do want to make it clear that there are ways to add value by doing some of your own research on things like this and making adjustments to projections. Anyway, the last thing I'll note here is a lot of the content we put up onto YouTube about specific sports and those big specific sports specific playlists that are up on our YouTube channel are trying to target questions like these here. We still have some more baseball content planned here. For this season, we still have more baseball videos we want to have come out, but I would say, one of the best advice I can give if you are stuck on a sport or trying to add value is to review some of the content on YouTube, and see, what you can pull out of that. Because I think that's the best way to go there. So, as one thing I've mentioned here on stream before is that as a process gets more, not even complex, but maybe advanced, right? As you understand the basics of strategy and how to use SaberSim and things like that more and more for a particular sport, what I or anybody can tell you, hey, do next becomes more and more general. Right, it's very easy to be specific about the basics. It's very hard to be specific about more kind of advanced process. So, I hope that helps a little bit as kind of a little bit more. I mean, I guess the last thing I'll note on this here is everybody's process, to some extent, is going to be unique to them. And when I offer a lot of my research build strategies up here on stream, it's not really with the idea that, you know, dozens of you can go in and just immediately start doing exactly what I do, right? It is to more or less give you an idea of how I think about DFS and what my process looks like, with an understanding that there's a certain set of skills that I have that are somewhat natural to me that others won't have, but you have skills that I don't have. There are things that you'll understand about baseball and baseball DFS and DFS more broadly, and maybe even SaberSim on a more intuitive level that aren't intuitive to me. And there's a process out there probably for you that I wouldn't be successful doing. I think you'll find that all sharp players do something a little bit unique. That's a combination of their own individual skills and where they can add value based on a combined understanding of what the edge is in that sport. And our goal with a lot of our content and even these office hours, and my goal here is to make sure that you understand everything SaberSim can do. You understand what your tool can do and why it's powerful. And you understand what the raw strategies are, right? Where are the edges in that sport and why? But some of the meshing of those two together is going to have to take place on your own, because I can't, all jokes aside, there isn't actually just like the print money process that can just be repeated by everybody. So that's why these questions, I guess to conclude, that's why these questions are tough, because a lot of what is very easy to do up on stream here when I'm just looking at the camera and talking to you guys is explain what does the tool do, how can you use the tool, and what are the core strategies you need to be successful in the sport. But marrying those two is where it gets hard. So anyway. All right. I'm glad somebody asked this. Andrew said, I'm going to need an explanation for this birthday thing. Okay. So have you, okay, let's see here. Hold on. Okay. So what I'm referring to is this, the birthday problem, right? So it's in a set of N random people, at least two will share a birthday, right? And it exceeds the probability that at least two people will share a birthday in a group of only 23 people, which I think a lot of times the first time people encounter this, it's surprising, right? It feels strange when you think it only takes 23 random people in a room, in a group, for two of them to share a birthday together, right? And this is basically what this is saying, right? It appears wrong, but it is in fact true. And the reason why is because you intuitively kind of think about it, you know, how often have I ran into somebody that shares my birthday? And that's probably something that hasn't happened very often. But when you compare that there are, you know, 253 different pairs, right, here, because every person there can be uniquely paired with every other person in the room, the probability goes up really quickly. So the analogy I'm trying to make here, and I realize it's not perfect, it doesn't perfectly come across, is that there's a couple different cognitive biases, I think, at play here. But if you're looking at like 40,000 lineup contests, right? There are 40,000, and let's just assume, for example, that there's 40,000 unique lineups in this contest. And there's a wide variety of skill level of different players in that contest. Well, there's a lot of lineups in that contest that are going to be bad, that are negative EV, that maybe for a baseball GPP, right, that aren't very correlated. They're packed full of one-offs. Maybe they're kind of chalky. Maybe they're like just generally cash lineups, right? Now, if you were to play a lineup like that, you are probably going to be unsuccessful, right? That's you sharing a birthday with anybody else in the room. But the probability that any of those lineups, that pool of bad lineups that's taking up equity in that contest, randomly binks that contest, or maybe if it's not that one, maybe it's the next day, is a lot higher. So basically, just because you as one single individual are going to see bad lineups win sometimes doesn't make those lineups good. And it doesn't mean that you should you should play them, right? Just because two people in the room share a birthday doesn't mean that you do, I guess, is kind of what I was trying to say. I don't know. It popped into my head. It kind of felt relevant. I got to take some shots up here on stream sometimes. Keep you guys on your toes. I don't know. Hopefully that explanation at least made sense of kind of where I was going. But the more important note here, or the more important thing to get, is not how the birthday problem paradox relates to DFS. It is more that not every lineup that wins a contest can just be treated as good, right? And I actually talked about this specifically yesterday. If you're going to go study lineups from players that you know are profitable and that are skilled. I wouldn't recommend studying winning lineups on any given night and try to come up with something profound to do as a result of that, because bad lineups are going to win sometimes. It's just the way it is. So that's the way, that's what I was basically trying to say. So Brad says, I don't even know what a paradox is. Yeah, I actually think there's like, I think it's up to some dispute of whether or not this is actually like a paradox. I don't know. Maybe I'll go down a little bit of a YouTube hole here. Because I know some people argue that this isn't actually, I mean, it's called birthday problem here, but I know some people call this not a, like, say that this isn't actually a paradox, but anyway. Richie said, lol, thanks for the response. Hopefully I that's in good faith. I feel like I have been a little rambly here today. So hopefully I kind of made the point clear. But Brad says, I guess one of my issues is I play scared as well, as I don't like over leveraging. I try to play with the field on most guys as I don't trust myself, and scared money don't make no money. Yeah. I think it depends on in that regard. It depends a little bit on your number of lineups that you're playing as well. Like, I think if you're playing 150, you can get away with sticking really closely to the field and trying to get an edge basically on your roster construction. And assuming that, you know, especially in a larger field GPP, that ownership's pretty efficient, trying to match it pretty closely and just gain your edge from stacking and correlating. I think that's fine. In 20 lineups, you almost have to take shots on guys because you just don't have enough equity in the contest to match the field on everybody. You have to make some decision points. So, Neil said, hey, Jordan, did you happen to see that post in support in Slack about the correlation between Urias and Dodgers bats yesterday? Let's see. I hadn't until now. Let's see. Mills said, let's see. He said, I was told this was a known problem a few weeks ago. Every now and again, a pitcher has unusually high correlation with their hitters. Knowing what we all know now about the MLB sliders, this is obviously having a significant impact on which lineups are rated highest. Any word on this? Is it correct? Or what do you suggest doing if it's not? So Chris had responded and said he was going to look into this and follow up. So I do believe that, you know, we have looked, and this is just based on my understanding of this topic here. But I do believe we've kind of looked into this, and we're happy with where our correlations are at. I can't speak exactly for the Dodgers situation last night, but you know, the last time I had talked to Matt about this, one of the things that he had mentioned is that for hitters that have you know, higher scoring upside, especially like via home runs, they are going to correlate better with their particular pitcher because their scoring outcomes increase the win equity of the team quite a bit, right? Whereas maybe a team that, you know, that has well projected, maybe like very cheap value bats that project pretty well, but maybe the team is favored to lose the game anyway and don't have a lot of like individual home run upside. They don't have like win creating upside in their simulations, aren't going to correlate as well with the pitcher. I'll wait to see a little bit more of what Chris says when he responds there as well. I'm interested to see where that conversation goes. I wouldn't worry too much about this. Neil said the correlation was super high, though. I noticed myself a huge chunk of the highest saber score lineups was Urias lineups with Dodger stacks. Yeah, it's possible there was something going on there. So I will, before I say something wrong, I will pause on this and wait to hear what we hear back from maybe the models team. I'm happy to talk a little bit more about it, maybe on tomorrow's stream as well, if there's more information there. But I'm curious, you know. So decent, I mean, decent correlations between some of these guys here tonight. Let's look at yesterday. Oh, yeah, pretty high. Oh, yeah, those are pretty high correlations. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I will wait to hear back. So, good question. Okay, let's see if I missed anything here. Let's see. Okay. Epic problem said, I realize Sims aren't on the horizon anytime soon, but any chance of builder support and slates for WNBA? Yeah, I'll bring that up with the team. I'm sure Eric Sabersim, Eric would be happy if we had builder support for WNBA as well. Yeah. I'll see if we can get that up. Because I think then you can even just build lineups with custom projections, which is always a nice in between. So, and then let's see, Edward has a research build question for me. And he said, I always run my first research build 0010. I use looking for, oh, I realized I missed a question from somebody else earlier as well. Like somebody had two questions and I only answered the first one. So we'll go back to that. I always run my first research build with a 0010 build, which I use for looking at starting pitcher and overall batter exposures, preliminary look at stacks. My question is, doing a research build for stacks, I do a research build for five stacks. I was wondering if I should do something like 3010 or 5010 to take into consideration correlation between the batters on the team. Also, is a five stack a good research builder? Would you suggest a four stack and why? Thanks in advance. Yes, good question. So when I want to research stacks specifically, I prefer to just set a five stack, right? And build something like this and set a five stack. I don't like to use the correlation slider when I'm doing a research build just because So the correlation slider changes the player projections that are scored in that bucket, basically, is when it builds a lineup. So it's a really useful thing for actually building good lineups. But when you're purely just trying to research what stacks have the highest rate of being optimal, I just don't like that factor to get included, right? I like looking at the raw point projections that are scored from single game sims and then forcing the builder to create a stack with a rule for my research builds specifically. I don't know if there's actually a material difference between these two. If there is, there's probably not a significant one, but it's always felt to me like doing the build with a five stack is purer for your research builds. I like to use a five stack just because it's the largest stack size possible on DK. When I do it on FanDuel, I use a four stack. Again, I'm not sure. I wouldn't say one's right and one's wrong. If you want to research four stacks, set a four stack rule. I typically want to research five stacks. So I use a five stack rule. I think your approach overall though makes some sense. I would say I think this approach makes sense. Running one without the stacking rule first and seeing how things look, and then running another one with it and seeing how things look from there, I think is a good approach. I think some of this is splitting hairs here. I think if you're finding that using a research build with correlation on and no stacking rule is more useful for you and more helpful, then just do that. It's not going to hurt anything. More specifically, I guess, all of this has so much error anyway. Right? There's error within the sims. There's error within the projections, right? Nothing's perfect. There's error within the assumption of a research build. The assumptions being, there's two big assumptions in a research build. One is that a 1500 slate simulation is representative of the whole. That's not necessarily always true. And the second assumption here is that a player's percent chance of being in the optimal is approximates the player's percent chance of being in the winning lineup for a contest. And that's not always true, right? So all of the, I think a research build is still a very good tool, very powerful tool, but all of these sources of error probably outweigh whatever the difference is between using a correlation slider value versus a stacking rule in terms of being like perfectly correct. So I wouldn't sweat too much about it. I like, if you're asking me what I like to do when I research stacks, I do 0, 0, 10. I also do this at zero. And I set the stacking rule here. That's the way I do it. So, but good question there. Okay, let's see. So where was that question I missed? Because I know there was one. Let's see. Where was it? I feel like it was kind of early. Oh yeah, here we go. Bonus question. That's what it was. I remember now. We never did the bonus question. Oh, actually, it's literally, I feel like, just exactly what I just answered. In a research build, does it ever make sense to leave the correlation slider where it is when trying to determine optimal stacks for baseball? Thanks. Okay, so actually, I feel like the one thing that is a little bit different the way this question is written, so I at least the way I'm reading it here, is this a bit, this is more about trying to figure out actually what stack sizes are optimal, right? There isn't, at least as far as I'm aware, as I wonder, let's experiment with something real quick here. I'm going to try something. We're just going to take a chance here. Yeah. I don't know if a research build can easily be used to determine what stack sizes are optimal here. And it actually, I think it exposes the problem here. Yeah. So it exposes the problem like of the research build, right? Is the research build is going to, it's going to approximate the percent chance of a player being in the winning lineup by showing how often they're in the optimal, but we rarely need the optimal to win, right? In fact, we willingly forego lineups that we willingly build lineups that are unlikely to be the optimal because they are correlated to build lineups that have higher positive EV overall. So I think it's hard to use a research build to learn what stack sizes are best to use. With that said, I would say the correlation slider itself, when it comes time to actually build your final lineups, the correlation slider has been really diligently set at where it is to build lineups that build good stack sizes. If you are looking for what are the right size stacks to play for a particular contest and slate size and whatever, I would be really trusting overall of the stacks that you are getting by default. I think it is one of the things overall that SaberSim for baseball does the best, and that is building lineups with the right constructions. So because we've really worked hard at putting that correlation slider where it is to get those kinds of stacks. So like it's typically really solid in terms of the constructions you're getting for that contest. So yeah, it's interesting in NBA. So I know in NBA, I've talked a little bit before about how I use research builds to actually research constructions. And I think it's a little bit easier with negative correlation, like we have in NBA, to do that, right? You can kind of survey the sims and see how often, you know, if a certain, and maybe that's actually a flaw of that, but if a certain, if it's unlikely that four players from the same team ever ends up in the optimal in NBA, I think actually, let me put it this way. So in NBA, one thing that I've talked about here on stream before is how I will run research builds let's go back to like a main slate, right? So I'll run research builds to learn that, you know, for example, four players from the same team is unlikely to be the optimal, right? Well, just like in baseball, we don't actually need the optimal to be successful in NBA. But the nice thing is that when we go in and set a rule to say no more than three players from the same team, that pushes us in the direction of making a lineup that is more correlated or more or less negatively correlated. In baseball, right, if you run a research build for a slate, you are going to see that all of the lineups, actually, we already did this today, right? Don't we have a research build we can use here? One sec. Did we run one? Thought we did. Maybe not. I'm just wasting time here. We haven't. Okay. So let's run one here. So then we can just show you what I mean here. Because I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself anyway, talking through this. Oh, that's not a research build. One second. Be patient with me, everybody, here. I'm pressing the wrong buttons, locking everything up, causing problems, slowing the stream down. It's ruined. All right, let's see. So let's actually run one properly here. Okay, so we'll run a build, and we'll look at these constructions here, right? So keep in mind, these are single slate simulation optimals, right? Every lineup is an optimal for a sim of the slate, right? The expectation here is that these lineups aren't going to look very correlated. You might get a little bit of stacking on an individual lineup to lineup basis, but it's unlikely that you'll really see big stacks because the optimal lineup, the best lineup you could have made at the end of the slate for a 12-game baseball slate is very rarely going to be a very pretty, oh man, now it's not even running, a very pretty lineup, right? It's probably going to be the best, you know, a bunch of random players from different teams and the two best overall pitchers. Let's see if we can at least get this to run so I can at least get a few lineups, right? And the point I was trying to make is that on NBA, we can run the same build. And while you're still going to get that effect, right? That those constructions are going to tell you what the optimal is, and you don't necessarily need the optimal to win. In NBA, learning something from that pushes you in the direction of being more correlated. So you end up with a lineup when you use what you learned from the research build and set a no more than three rule for NBA, for example, which is something I like to use a lot, that makes your lineups better. In baseball, that's not necessarily true, right? If we attempted to look at these stack sizes and learn something from this or use this, this would actually probably make our lineups less correlated, right? This would make our lineups worse. So that is why I think, you know, it's the wrong direction, I guess, is the simple way of saying this, is that in both cases, the fundamental assumption that the optimal lineup is not necessarily the winning lineup is true. But at least that assumption allows you to be directionally correct in basketball, whereas in baseball, it does not. So all of this to say, on this bonus question here, just like the previous question, yes, if you want to research stacks, I think for your research bills, set a stack rule, or if you prefer to leave the correlation slider on or have some correlative value in there, do that instead. But what I would not do is engage with like the Sims directly and run these uncorrelated research builds and try to come up with something meaningful about what this says about optimal construction, because it doesn't say very much. So, and that's it. We're going to leave it there. We're at about an hour here. I don't see any other questions here while I've been rambling about research builds for the last 10 minutes. Appreciate everybody that tuned in to the stream here today. I will be right back again tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern. Enjoy the slate tonight. It's a big one. These 12-game Tuesday night slates are always pretty fun. Not always 12 games, I guess, but always these big slates on Tuesday nights. Pretty fun slates here. If you're still grinding playoff NBA DFS as well, good luck there. Check out the podcast version of this show. We are up on most podcast carriers now. I think still waiting on Amazon and Google, but basically anywhere else you watch your podcasts should be up there. And if, of course, this is your first time watching the stream or you otherwise don't yet have a SaberSim subscription, sabersim.com, free 7-day trial. Come check us out. We reset everybody's trial at the start of baseball season. So if you tried us before and want to come back, give it another try. We've made a lot of improvements probably since the last time you've been here. get another trial going. Anyway, good luck tonight. See you guys tomorrow. Take care.